Hello and welcome to Banfield. We've got breaking news tonight. Reports that South Carolina police have made an arrest in what's officially called the attempted murder of Alex Murdoch. Murdoch, as you may well know, is the once mighty but now disgraced attorney and part-time prosecutor whose wife and son were murdered in early June and who himself was shot in the head on the side of a low country highway a week ago Saturday. That was one day after he had resigned from the family business, a law firm, after being accused of embezzling millions of dollars. Right now, Murdoch himself is in a drug rehab, and the state law enforcement division, known as SLED, well, they're not talking about an arrest or really anything else. But our News Nation station in Charleston got confirmation from law enforcement sources. And I have my go-to panel to break it all down. Inside Edition chief correspondent and attorney Jim Murray is with us. Defense attorney and former South Carolina prosecutor Susan E. Williams is with me. And Andrew Davis, an investigative correspondent from WSAV in Savannah. All three of you, thank you so much. I want to begin with you right away, Andrew. This is quite a development just happening in the last hour or so. Is there any word yet who the arrest might be?
Well, I'm working on a few things so far. I have a source with a name, and there's a gentleman and his father who could be this potential suspect who do live in Islington right now. I cannot get that confirmed. I can tell you that they are not, either one is not in Hampton County Jail right now. I'm working on trying to find out if they are in Colleton County or Jasper County, which are nearby counties as well. But all we've got is sort of this random name coming out, but there hasn't been an arrest that has been confirmed so far. SLED is not talking about any of it, but I can confirm they're not in the Hampton County Jail, at least yet, or haven't been booked if that happens. So we're trying to figure out exactly how this is connected and what way they are connected to the Murdoch family, which apparently, according to what we're hearing, is they were somehow connected to the Murdoch family.
So, Susan, I am not going to assume for a moment that you would know exactly who's been arrested at this extremely early time. However, I know that the rumor mill is rampant, and certainly in the closed community, a lot of people have been talking about this. Have you been able to search jail records? And I'm going to just throw out a couple more here. I think Andrew mentioned Hampton, Colleton, and Jasper. What about Beaufort County? Have you been able to check any jail records to see if anyone's been booked in?
Yes, I've also looked, and the consensus that I get is that South Carolina, the citizens of South Carolina are glad to have finally an arrest, because we've been waiting for quite some time, giving SLED time that they requested, and we're just glad to see that someone has been arrested in conjunction with these mysteries. I did check the Beaufort County jail index and did come up with a few names, but I have no way of knowing if those folks are connected or not.
Yeah, to be clear, nobody yet has seen the name Alex Murdoch in any of these jail records. So right now, that's not on the radar. Jim Murray, it's just so remarkable, however, that I opened the show saying this is officially an attempted murder. And yet, all right, the things that Alex Murdoch's lawyer told us about that day that his client was shot in the head, all the details about a blue truck, about a man who rolled down his window and said, "You got car trouble there, fella?" None of that came from the police. The sketch that apparently was started with Alex Murdoch's detail, that wasn't released from the police. And yet, there's no BOLO, the be on the lookout. All of it just doesn't sound like crimes we normally cover, Jim.
Well, also, you had the story that Alex Murdoch had car trouble, as you indicated, and that he was changing his tire, but his vehicle had run flat tires, as I've read, which don't require changing. The whole point of a run flat is they can run flat. It's also unclear whether this arrest is in connection with the shooting of Alex Murdoch, or don't forget, there's two other murders that are unsolved, and there's somebody on the loose with regard to those. That's Alex Murdoch's wife and his son, Paul. So you really need a flow chart for all of this. It's so complicated. And as you indicated at the top of the show, it changes by the hour or by the minute.
And it sometimes changes by the second. I've got some news in from WCBD as well in Hampden County, and they are saying that their law enforcement sources are confirming that this arrest is in fact in connection to the September 4th shooting of Alex Murdoch. So, Andrew Davis, look, it would be remarkable if we finally got some movement in the double murder of Paul and Maggie, Alex's wife and son. But if there's at least some movement in this crime scene, this is the scene just from a week ago on the side of that low country highway where Alex Murdoch's late wife's Mercedes, that's Maggie right there in that spot shadow with the son Paul, the two of them both murdered. That was her Mercedes with the run flat tires. And at this point, Andrew Davis, if they're making some progress, that would be the fastest progress yet in any of these bizarre developments in this crime.
Well, in addition, it brings into question so many of the theories that so many people have. A, that Alex Murdoch was directly involved with this, that he perhaps even was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. We still don't know if there's more to, did he have some involvement in this, his own shooting, to try to take some of the pressure off himself. But if you're already putting someone behind bars, then it starts to put some validity to his theory that he was actually targeted in this case by someone or this random shooting, which puts Alex in a better light than perhaps he was before. But the only question I have is, you have potentially someone in who's an older gentleman, if I'm hearing correctly what I've heard so far from the name and from the people out there. And if he's an older gentleman, why would he do this? What connection is there in any form to Alec, other than was there a connection to try to get Alec a little bit better publicity, as it was in this case? SLED so far is not saying anything, as they haven't said before. All the people in Hampden County keep talking to me going, please help me. Tell me something that I shouldn't be scared in my own home. And now suddenly they're not even confirming that there may be an arrest to try to help some of these people out.
Yeah, I find that the most disquieting of all. Susan, the fact that there's an attempted murderer out there somewhere, and yet no BOLO, no be on the lookout, no information from the police that there's a blue truck and a man driving who shot someone in the head and had multiple pulls on the trigger because there were multiple shell casings. That sounds like a pretty violent attack. And for the police to say nothing, tell me, is it normal in your neck of the woods, in the low country, to have a partial description of an attempted murderer and just not release the sketch because you don't think it's good enough and you want more information from the man who was shot? Does that sound normal for your community?
Normally, it doesn't sound like something that would be in my community. However, as we all know, this case is full of twists and turns. And what would be normal for a regular case is turning out to be, as we can see, things dropping day by day, hour by hour. Pretty much nothing surprises me at this point. SLED has said...
I mean, I agree, Susan, but I've got to be honest. I mean, you guys all know a lot more about this than I do. I mean, Andrew, you're in South Carolina. Jim, you're a lawyer. Susan, you're a lawyer. And I'm up here trying to make sense of all these tentacles. But there's one thing I do know, and that is when there's someone dangerous out there, law enforcement tries to protect us by at least giving us what they know in terms of a description, and they also want our help. Jim Murray, when was the last time you heard of a crime that we covered where they didn't say, public, anybody, call Crime Stoppers, call if you know this vehicle, call if you know this slight description of this man? We're not hearing any of that, and I think that just doesn't sound right, Jim.
But I think that might tell you something, because I think if the police believed that there was a credible threat to the public, they would release that information. So to me, it suggests that perhaps they think this person was known to Alex Murdoch. Perhaps they believe Alex Murdoch is involved in this or the prior crimes, the murders of his wife and son. It suggests to me that the police, for whatever reason, don't believe that whoever did this to Alex Murdoch, shooting him in the head, is a threat to other people. So I think it really does tell you a great deal.
Yeah. Andrew Davis, give me a bit of a feel for, you know, working the phones where you are. The way it is with crime reporters, investigative reporters, the rest of us in this business is we just start spreading out as far and wide as we can to find anything we can. Have you had the phone like hung up on you? Have you had people say no comment? Have you had police say, here's your voicemail, and it goes to the, you know, the never ending and we're not answering voicemail? Like, what is it like trying to get information in the Alex Murdoch case?
Well, it's been very difficult from the SLED side of things, but also to understand Hampton County is incredibly isolated. They have limited amount of deputies, only a dozen or so in all. The sheriff runs the entire town in that entire county, and he's not easy to deal with from the level of he is friendly, but unless you live there, you're not going to get a connection with him. Collin County, even more isolated, and that's exactly where the murders happened, and everyone now is under the auspices of SLED, so they're not allowed to speak. They're not allowed to say very much. So even if you get somebody on the phone, they will immediately pass you off to someone else. I have connections in Beaufort County and Jasper County that I can get to, but they don't have the connections in Hampton because it is so isolated and so rural at this time. So I've been on the phone off and on all night trying to get more and more, but it's so hard to just find somebody who's willing to say anything, even just, hey, there was an arrest, or maybe there's more than just a name out there. And so far, everybody's very tight-lipped on what's going on.
Okay, I'm communicating with a source as we speak who's mentioning a name, Eddie. I'm not getting any clarity on this at all, but I'm getting a first name, Eddie. So I'm going to, you know, zip off to commercial break for a minute, see if I can get some clarity on it. I don't want any of you to leave, but I do want to say after the break, I'm not only going to figure that part out, I also want to talk about another huge development today. Like every day as a huge development, but this one is like a couple $100,000 worth of development. Remember that housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield, who fell down the stairs and there was a $500,000 settlement that the Murdochs apparently were going to pay to the housekeeper's family? Well, her two sons got nothing. Zero. Even though the insurance company paid the settlement. So where's the money, and why was their lawyer, the sons, a college roommate of Alex Murdoch and a godfather to Paul Murdoch? We're going to answer those questions right after this. Welcome back. There is breaking news tonight in a story we've been covering for months now, and that is that an arrest has been made in the shooting of Alex Murdoch. You might remember a little over a week ago, he was shot in the head while presumably changing a flat tire or a troubled tire on the side of the road. Here's the crime scene. You can see the cones. Again, presumably they are marking where shell casings were found. The reports are there were multiple shell casings, and the lawyer for Alex Murdoch reported that he had pulled over when his indicator light suggested there was tire trouble. And as he was assessing what to do about a flat tire on his late wife's Mercedes, a blue pickup truck passed him by, turned around in a church parking lot, came back to him, rolled down a window, asked him if he had car trouble, and promptly shot him in the head. Well, now we are learning that there's been arrest. I do want to tell you that a source who's close to this case has confirmed to me as well that there's been discussion, and I'm just going to use these words directly, that they have seen, again, people in the community who know Alex Murdoch, they have seen a black male in a blue truck leaving Murdoch's property in the past, but no one knows a name connected. There was no suggestion that the person who rolled down the window asking Alex Murdoch if he had car trouble was black or white or anything in terms of race. In fact, the only way we know this is not from the police, but from Alex Murdoch's attorney, Jim Griffin. So there's the headline. Sources say arrest made in connection to the shooting of Alex Murdoch. But the big development, the name of the arrest, still a mystery. Lots of rumor about who it is. But just quickly back to you, Andrew Davis. Still nothing from the jail records tonight to suggest that the rumors that are circulating are actually the fact.
No, I've gone through multiple counties now and talked to them about the names that we have heard on several levels. No one in the Colleton County Jail or Hampton County Jail, Beaufort County Jail, or Jasper County Jail has those people in custody right now. So we're still working on a rumor and innuendo of a name. You said it earlier about hearing about someone named Eddie. We've matched that up with some of the other sources we've heard, but we can't lock that down yet. But I feel comfortable putting out a name at any point, especially with all the twists and turns in this case. The last thing you want to do is start connecting somebody to something, especially in a small community. I will tell you there are two people who would be using that name or in some form who do live in Islington, which of course is where the property was, where Paul and Maggie Murdoch were killed. So it would match up with some of this information, but that would also not be logical. We can't figure that out officially yet until we lock it down with a full name. And that seems to be more of a nickname than anything else.
Well, as soon as we get it, and it could happen at any moment, we're just going to keep, you know, our lines of communication open on this one. We're certainly going to broadcast that to our viewers. In the meantime, there's that other little matter today, Jim Murray. And when I say little, it's little in connection to this headline that you're looking at on your screen, but it's huge in the case, and that is that housekeeper who died a few years ago falling down the stairs and a wrongful death settlement to the tune of $500 was reached for that housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield's family. Well, her two sons haven't received a nickel. And the most distressing part, Jim Murray, there she is, Gloria Satterfield, in better days, obviously. The most distressing part, Jim, as a lawyer, was that we discovered her attorney, you know, her kid's attorney, in this wrongful death suit for their mom, was Alex Murdoch's college roommate and also Paul Murdoch's godfather. And that lawyer's name is Corey Fleming. Well, he's no longer their attorney. Instead, they've got an attorney named Eric Bland who's taking him to task, saying, where's the $270,000 that my clients haven't seen? Doesn't this just stink to high heaven in the field of law to see that kind of conflict of interest?
Well, yeah, the disturbing thing is that apparently there were $177,000 in attorney's fees that were paid to this gentleman who was representing the sons. But as you indicate, they didn't get anything. You know, all of the descriptions of this lady, she had worked for the family for 25 years. She helped raise their children. She was considered a member of the family. But apparently, the Murdoch family did not even pay for her funeral, and she was not well off in any respect. She had a great deal of financial difficulties in the past, as I've read. And it's so disturbing to think that this is, in fact, true, that there was $177,000 in attorney's fees paid, and yet the clients received nothing. Where did the other money go? There's also a question of whether there was an additional insurance proviso and coverage for this family. So there may have been even more paid out that this family doesn't even know about. There's a lot of problems here.
So, Susan, real quickly, you know, I know that contingency fees can be upwards of 30-35%. So I'm not so concerned about the amount that the lawyers got. I'm concerned that that lawyer got the money where the kids didn't, and the insurance company paid it. So it's not as though they're waiting for the insurance company to come up with it. The reporting is that the money actually was paid out. So, Susan, where does that go? Is that sort of one of those easier mysteries to solve and get money to where it should be?
Well, I would just want to go back and make a slight correction that it was actually $500,000 rather than $500. And it could be that it's sitting in Corey Fleming's trust account. We don't know. It could be waiting for probate. We don't know that. But it is heartbreaking if it is true that Corey Fleming has been paid his attorney fees and Ms. Satterfield's beneficiaries haven't been paid. That is terrible. And I would think that it's, I hope that it's sitting in a trust fund somewhere, waiting to be dispersed once probate's finished. It could be that there are some bills that need to be paid, such as hospital bills or some type of liens or creditors that Ms. Satterfield had. I don't know exactly what the problem is, but they need to figure it out, and they need to figure it out quickly.
Well, you bet. No kidding. And my mistake, if I said 500, clearly 500,000, that was the wrongful death settlement. We got a lot of information that's crossing the desk right now. I'm going to keep my eye on this, and we're going to break in with programming right away if we get that name of the arrest and the connection to Alex Murdoch. In the meantime, thank you so much, Jim, Andrew, Susan. Do appreciate it. We'll continue to follow the story, and we'll call you again. Clearly, you guys know what you're doing. All right, so I'm going to switch gears. For this next story, it is a breaking story. It is the case of Gabby Petito. If you don't know about Gabby, she's a 22-year-old woman who went on a road trip with her fiancé, but she disappeared, and he came back. And now no one knows where she is, and he's not talking. Does that make any sense? Not to Gabby's father, and he's joining us next. To be young and in love and on the road in the summertime, it is the stuff that movies are made of. But movies are also made when people mysteriously disappear and those who are last with them go silent, such as the story of 22-year-old Gabby Petito and her fiancé, Brian Laundrie. The tale of their cross-country van trip has been a delightful distraction on social media.
Me and Brian just got up and got ready, made the bed in the tent, set up. I think our plan for today is to just hang out here in the tent. Brian's stretching, doing some morning yoga.
But then, all of a sudden, everything took a very dark turn. Gabby vanished, completely off the grid. And the man who should have all the answers, the soon-to-be husband named Brian, he just turned that van around and drove back across the country to his parents' house in Florida. Without a word about Gabby, not even to her parents. Now the FBI has that white van. And police, they want to talk to Brian, except he won't talk to them either. He did release this very peculiar statement to the press saying, "I understand that a search has been organized for Miss Petito in or near Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. On behalf of the Laundrie family, it is our hope that the search for Miss Petito is successful and that Miss Petito is reunited with her family." And it was his lawyer that actually released that statement. But that was it. He hopes Miss Petito, his fiance, is reunited with her family, but not with him. News Nation correspondent Brian Enten is following this story. He's outside of Brian Laundrie's house in Florida. Brian, we're learning tonight that this Brian Laundrie, and Gabby Petito may have actually had some difficulties and actually had a run-in with the police in Utah. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, Ashley, this is new. Within just the last 10 minutes, we got this confirmed through the Moab City, Utah Police Department. So I'm going to read this to you. Our officers did respond to an incident involving Brian Laundrie and Gabrielle Petito on August 12th. However, neither Brian or Gabrielle were the reporting party. Officers conducted an investigation and determined that insufficient evidence existed to justify criminal charges. So basically what that means, someone saw the couple, apparently saw something suspicious, called police. Police went out and investigated, but decided not to press charges.
So, Brian, behind you is the Laundrie household. I can only imagine that it is, there's not a lot of activity. Clearly, when someone is under the microscope like that Brian is, I don't even know if he's in the house. But it was weird when the police said, and I can't even believe I'm saying this about a 23-year-old man, that the parents wouldn't provide him or wouldn't make him available to the police. He's an adult. You don't need parents to make an adult available to the police. Do we have any more clarity on how they have tried to question him or approach him or just get basic communication from him?
So the whole thing has been very strange and mysterious. The police here, basically, they showed up to Brian Laundrie's parents' house, to the front door, which you see right here. They say they made contact with the parents, and the parents told them, we are not going to talk to you. Our son is not going to talk to you. All we will do right now is give you the phone number for our attorney. So from what we were told today by the police department, that was all of the contact. But this is also interesting, Ashley. The front driveway here, this is where the van was. This is where police found the van. So they were able to tow the van away, and we're told they have an FBI team now looking for any forensic evidence inside that van.
It is just so incredibly curious. Brian Enten, thank you for keeping us abreast of the late developments this evening. And check back in with us if you see anything or hear anything from that man, Brian Laundrie. I want to bring in a special guest tonight. Gabby Petito's father, Joe, is joining us. And Mr. Petito, I cannot imagine what you're going through at this time, and I am so sorry that we're meeting under these circumstances. Have you heard anything more from the police about the potential whereabouts of your daughter?
No, we haven't. It's still, you know, they still got a lot of stuff they got to go through. You know, it's rough, you know, but I, you know, I'm going to start off, just keep her picture up, you know, if you can do that. Keep her, you know, as long as you can, because we need everyone to know exactly what she looks like, so you guys can find her. You know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, you know, make sure we can get her home. So the longer that you guys can keep her picture up and keep the story out there, and, you know, until she comes home, yeah, anything like that, you know, I do appreciate it.
Well, let me ask the control room while you're talking, just to keep these pictures going right beside us. And this is a picture that shows, you know, her tattoo on her left arm. These are tattoos on her fingers. These are important markings if you're, you know, anywhere out there, you know, in the Midwest or further. Just quickly, Mr. Petito, what is the story with Brian Laundrie? Do you have any idea if he's talked to anyone about when the last time he saw Gabby was, and what were the circumstances of them separating?
No, I don't have any information. You know, the last time, you know, I talked to Gabby was on the 21st. So I don't have, you know, their whereabouts yet or anything else. So we, you know, we're trying to do everything we can. I mean, you would think someone would want to cooperate with you if you love them and you call them your fiance, and yeah, you know, I mean, that just makes sense to me, but you know, I guess he had a different idea. But I don't know, you know, because there are questions that need to be asked and need to be answered. That's not happening. So I understand, you know, that, so we got to do the next best thing, and that is fine. You know, look, go out and, you know, go over what we can and get as much information as we can. So asking them, you know, all your viewers, if you guys can go through photos, if you were traveling, you know, if you see them in the background, shoot it to the tip line. You know, if you think you saw it in a certain area, shoot it to the tip line. I mean, that's the best thing that we could do right now. That's all I can ask. I mean, I'm begging of it, you know, to be honest with you, until we get her home. So if you guys can, you know, keep this story up as long as you can until she comes home, I would greatly appreciate it. You know, families would greatly appreciate it.
Just in closing, I've got a couple seconds left here, but did you have any red flags about Brian Laundrie before this?
No. You know, and I said it before, no, I haven't seen red flags, but that's not something you're going to tell your dad. You know, because your dad's a fixer, right? You know, no dad wants to see the daughter cry. So, you know, if I would have seen a red flag, you know, I'd be all up in arms about it. But to be honest, I haven't.
Mr. Petito, thank you for being with us. I'm so appreciative of your time. And stay in touch with us. Keep us posted on what you find out. And we will, without question, I'm sorry, we just lost our signal and switched signals for a moment, but we'll continue to follow the story of Gabby Petito and her whereabouts. In the meantime, the man you just saw, what a huge, unfortunately, that we're crossing signals here with our images for a moment. But when we come back, you probably heard about Operation ARC, a Royal Marine in Afghanistan who said he would not leave that country if he couldn't bring all of the 200 animals that he'd rescued home with him and his staff. Well, now he's done both. You're going to hear from him next. You know, it is great to be able to bring you an Afghanistan story that includes the following phrase, "so bloody happy." That was actually uttered, well, to be clear, it was tweeted by our friend Penn Farthing, the former British Royal Marine who founded an animal rescue clinic in the capital of Afghanistan, Kabul. Penn not only rescued dogs and puppies and cats and kitties and donkeys even, but he found them homes. And he also reunited them with the Western troops who'd befriended them during their tours. He also trained Afghanistan's first ever women veterinarians. And for all of this, he was named CNN's Hero of the Year in 2014. You may have heard last month, Penn's world came crashing down. And while he and almost 200 of his dogs and cats miraculously managed to get on a plane and get out of Kabul and get back to Britain, his dozens and dozens of Afghan staff members and their families were held, blocked by the Taliban. And now that's changed. Tonight, every single member of Penn Farthing's extended Afghan family is safely in the care of British diplomats in Pakistan. And Penn Farthing joins me live from Oslo, Norway, to talk about it. First of all, holy Dinah, I cannot believe you pulled it off. You got him out. I don't know how you did it, but I'd really love to know. Congratulations. What happened? How did you get them out of Afghanistan?
Well, firstly, thank you very much. And it's also down to your viewers who were watching the show who donated and helped us out, because it all took an amazing effort of our supporters and our crisis team that we had here in the UK, who got together and just did not give up whatsoever. They continued pushing and pushing so that we could get the staff out of Afghanistan. And thankfully, it all came together. And I'm just so happy. I don't think I've stopped smiling since they arrived into Islamabad.
So I'm going to just do some geography here for a second, because I've actually made that trip, Kabul to Jalalabad, through Tora Bora, the same place bin Laden went through, over the Torkum border crossing, Khyber Pass, and then, you know, to Islamabad. It is not easy to do that journey, and it is really hard. Really hard to get across that Torkum crossing if Taliban are all over the place. So how did they get across to the safety of Pakistan?
We spent quite a few days from when I got out of Kabul, which was the 28th of August, until obviously September the 11th, when they crossed through into Pakistan. We'd spend that whole time negotiating and dealing with all those Taliban checkpoints that we needed to pass so that we could actually get them safe passage all the way through and across into Pakistan. And it was just a minefield of negotiation and discussions, but we managed to do it. And it just all came together at the right time. I still can't, get my head around the fact that it actually came together.
So I need you to update me on two fronts, because we've got tons of animal lovers who watch this and they want to know how the 200 puppies and kitties and animals are all doing in quarantine and how soon they'll get out and get adopted. And then we also want to know what happens with all these incredible workers, the female veterinarians. There's a shortage of veterinarians in UK and in the US, and here they are perfectly trained. Will they all get jobs? Will the doggies all get homes? Update me.
All right, so the dogs and cats, they're all doing fine. We've got 94 dogs out and we've got 68 cats out. Sadly, we lost 6 cats during the transit from actually the tear gas from our first attempt to get into the airport. Sadly, they didn't make it. But the rest, they're all doing absolutely fine in quarantine now here in the UK, and they should be released, we're hoping, in the next couple of days. Lots of them already have owners, people who adopted them or people who are actually looking after them out in Afghanistan and had to leave and obviously sadly leave them behind. We've even got one dog that's for a US soldier rescue. So hopefully that will be reunited in the coming months with the soldier. They'll be going off to their homes. And our vet team are now safely with the British High Commission in Islamabad. So they're going through biometric testing, PCR testing, and their visa process. So we reckon they'll probably be coming to the UK in about a week's time. But then they'll sadly have to go into quarantine because Pakistan is on Britain's red list for coronavirus. So they will be doing 10 days in a quarantine hotel, sadly.
Well, it's safer than where they were. And as women veterinarians, they will get work, which is just so wonderful. Okay, I'm calling you in the next few days to see all those animals coming out of quarantine to find out where they're going to their forever homes. Congratulations, Penn. I'm really happy for you. I think all our viewers are just thrilled as well that everybody's safe. Yeah. Take care and let's talk soon.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you to all your viewers because they helped us make that happen. So thank you so much.
Oh, hallelujah. I just love that good story. What a great ending. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears again. And when we come back after the break, it's hard to even say this. Another SNL star gone too soon, way too soon. Some of the funniest moments from the remarkable Norm MacDonald after the break. A huge loss in the comedy world today. Norm MacDonald has died at the young age of 61 after a secret battle with cancer, 9 years long. That comedian got his start working in the comedy clubs in his native Canada and also in the U.S. before landing that gig on Saturday Night Live. He got rave reviews for his portrayals of Larry King and, of course, Bob Dole, and my personal favorite, Burt Reynolds.
The answer is Popeye is this sort of man. Burt Reynolds.
What is Popeye?
No. I want to guess this.
But it was as the anchor on Weekend Update where Norm MacDonald really started to shine with his cutting jokes, almost daring the audience not to laugh. When he was fired by the NBC brass, allegedly for not being funny, it only made him more popular. And the tributes are still pouring in tonight from the biggest names in comedy. Jim Carrey called Norm MacDonald a genius. Jim Gaffigan said, a legend. Conan O'Brien called his comedic voice the most unique ever. And David Letterman simply called him the best. It was actually on Conan and Dave's late night talk shows where Norm secured his place in comedy history. On Conan, he hilariously just took over an interview with actress Courtney Thorne Smith. And he once told a single joke about a depressed moth that lasted nearly 5 minutes straight.
Perhaps I could bring myself to reach over to that cocked and loaded gun that lays on the bedside behind me. And in this hellish facade once
How long
for
a
all.
Drive was this?
I don't know. He was the final stand-up comedian ever on David Letterman's show. And his legendary set, it simply brought the house down. And then he himself broke down on the air at the thought of David Letterman leaving television. Bet you identified with that. Norm MacDonald's comedy was uncompromising, and he explored some of the darkest parts of humanity for laughs, including his own gambling addiction and this little ditty about battling, you guessed it, cancer, from his 2017 comedy special. He had already been diagnosed with cancer. However, he kept that a secret from the audience.
He was waging a brave battle, but at the end, I guess he got kind of cowardly with what happened. And then the bell cancer, it got brave. You got to give it to the bowel cancer. You know, they were in a battle. And then, what the And I'm pretty sure, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure if the cancer dies, I mean, if you die, the cancer also dies at exactly the same time. So that, to me, is not a loss, that's a draw. That's a, you know what I mean?
Norm MacDonald, one of the funniest people ever, dead at the young age of 61. And I would think that the folks at NBC are rethinking that whole idea of him not being funny enough to be on SNL, because everybody else out there in comedy land, we sure think he is. He will be sorely missed. Tomorrow, programming note for you here on the program. I have been trying to book this lawyer on the show for a long time. His name is David Boies. You probably know him from Supreme Court fame. But he also represents a central figure in the case involving Prince Andrew. And that central figure is Virginia Giuffre. Virginia Roberts Giuffre, you might know her as. She is suing Prince Andrew in court in Manhattan, because she says when she was 17, she was loaned out to him by Jeffrey Epstein, and he raped her, not once, not twice, but three times, one of those times in Manhattan. And now she is represented by, you guessed it, David Boies, one of the finest lawyers ever to grace the planet. And yes, we booked him. I have never had so many questions that I have wanted to ask one lawyer, but I have a lot of questions for him. The first of which is, how do you sue a prince? A prince who apparently can hide behind the cloak of his mom, legally. Legally, he apparently can't take civil action against members of the royal family. A lot of questions for David Boies, a lot of answers hopefully tomorrow. Maybe he'll even make some news. So we hope you'll come right back here to Banfield tomorrow night. Thanks for being here tonight.